You're listening to Red Leg Nation Radio, the official podcast of RedLegNation.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Red Leg Nation Radio podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. Joining me today is one of our good friends and everybody's favorite internet minor league guru when it comes to the Reds, Doug Gray from RedsMinorLeagues.com. How you doing today, Doug?
I'm pretty good. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Doug, of course, follows the Reds minor leagues closer than anyone outside the Reds organization, as far as I'm concerned. And there's several things we want to get into with respect to the minor league guys and some of the prospects that are coming up and whose stock has risen, whose stock has dropped this year. But first, I want to talk a little bit about the Major League Reds, because they continue to surprise some. They're maybe in a little bit of a rough stretch right now, but they continue to be a competitive team and in the thick of the race, one game out as we record this. How surprised have you been at the performance of the Cincinnati Reds this year?
They're playing a little bit better than I expected. Before the season, I figured they'd win 84 or 85 games. They're on pace to win a few more than that. I think that the big thing has been, the pitching's been strong as of late. I expect it to be a little better than it was at the beginning of the season, but right now I think that they're at a point where they can maintain their overall, pitching as to where I expect it to be at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, the pitching has been finally started to perk up a little bit here lately. And at the exact same time that started happening, the hitting, which had been leading the league all year, went into the tank. And I think a lot of us were afraid that the offense for the Reds wouldn't be as good this year as we would need to get into the playoffs. Well, it's been better than anybody could have expected so far, but how concerned are you that with the current roster as it's set up, that these hitting problems are going to continue on through the end of September and into October?
I'm not too concerned. I mean, the only guy that I'm concerned about is Orlando Cabrera. Everybody else, I think that they bring something to the table that, helps out the offense. Now, this is assuming that Scott Rowland can come back and be healthy the rest of the way. Otherwise, whoever's playing third base is probably going to be a concern as well. Miguel Cairo's played well, but if he plays every day, I don't really see him keeping it up. Cabrera's really the only guy that I see is an offensive-only problem. I mean, I think that, left field is something that we may want to address. I like Johnny Gomes, but, he's not really killing the ball anymore. And if he's not killing the ball, I kind of question how much he's actually helping the team because his defense is pretty bad.
Doug, you're a semi-regular here on the podcast, and I'm really disappointed that we're not even 5 minutes in, you've already broken our cardinal rule of not mentioning Orlando Cabrera. Don't you know how sad it makes me to talk about Orlando Cabrera? You're not supposed to mention him.
You asked the question.
Well, don't be honest if we have to talk about Cabrera. Just let's go somewhere else on that. That whole Cabrera situation, watching him hit first or second every day, just makes my head hurt. Let's talk about, we're coming up on the trade deadline, obviously. The Reds, they need some help. There's opinions vary on what kind of help they need: bullpen, starting pitching, offense, shortstop, left field. You've touched on some of those issues. But let's talk about it from sort of a different perspective. Let's talk about some of the names that the Reds might have in the minor leagues as sort of trade chips. John Fay in the Inquirer today noted a few names, and let's just go one by one and let me know what you think about their value on the trade market in terms of how they perform this year, whether their stock has risen or fallen, et cetera, if that's all right. Let's start with Todd Frazier from down at Louisville. First of all, sort of update us on Frazier's season. He got off to an awfully rough start. He's been playing better lately, but what's your opinion on Frazier at this point?
I think that, from the beginning of the season, his stock has to be down. He came into the season ranked the number one prospect by Baseball America in our system, and his OPS is sitting at 704. He's really struggled, to hit throughout the season. I think in the long run he's going to be fine. The power's starting to come back around. I'm not sure how many people know this or not. He had knee surgery in the off season. It's why he didn't end up playing winter ball. And I kind of wondered how much that really had been affecting his swing after he had been struggling through April and May. The power's coming back, so I think that's a good sign. I think he just needs to make a few more adjustments, which he's always been able to make in his career. So I think that in the long run, he's going to be okay, but his stock certainly is down from where it was at the beginning of the season.
He's playing mostly third base down there, isn't he?
He's back out in left field now. When Juan Francisco went on the DL with the, the appendix went out, Todd did move into the infield, but now that Juan Francisco is back, he's pretty much out in left field again.
I just had noticed lately he'd been at third base or there for a while. He'd been third base for a while. And probably that, in my opinion, that may be his best position. Do you think he's got the chops to play second base on the major league level? My hope before the season was that he was going to this year really bust out and become a solid option at second base.
You know, he looked pretty uncomfortable there last year when they first moved him over. I think that as the season went along, he kind of picked up on some things, but he still had a ways to go. I was hoping that they'd stick with that experiment and, you know, give him a full season working at second base this year. I think that he probably needed it if he was ever going to play there in the major leagues. But since they haven't really stuck with it, I'm not really sure that's going to be an option.
Is he ever going to hit really well enough, do you think, to play, you know, left field, for example, in the major leagues?
I don't think that he can be, you know, a premier bat in left field, but, you know, he could be a guy that could hit you 40 doubles and 25 home runs and, you know, play average defense in left field.
And that's kind of what I was drooling over before the season was the thought that a guy like that could be maybe the long-term second baseman in Cincinnati. Of course, nobody knew that Brandon Phillips was going to really break out this year and have his best year, although he's been struggling lately. So that was sort of, you know, what I was hoping, whether or not he could do it defensively or not, I didn't know. But I'm afraid he goes from being what could possibly be a very valuable commodity as a second baseman to, you know, maybe an average left fielder or third baseman on the major league level. What about the name that's sort of on everybody's lips when you talk about trade chips, Yonder Alonso? He obviously he started out fairly poorly when he made it up to Louisville when he eventually got called up. Initially, he's played a little bit better, but the left field experiment, I guess, didn't work.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the improvements in the limited time he's played in left field lately. Like, it really is night and day difference compared to what he looked like at the beginning of the season. That's not saying much because he was pretty bad. Yeah, I think there's an outside chance that, you know, defensively he could be, you know, Johnny Gomes-esque. You know, he's not going to absolutely kill you as long as he can hit, but it's not really an ideal situation to, you know, have him out there every day unless he, you know, is a guy that can absolutely carry your offense.
Yeah, I'd say he's got a guy I think about that's fairly brutal in left field is Ryan Braun, but he hits well enough to make up for it. Johnny Gomes, you know, if you're being compared to Johnny Gomes defensively as being sort of your upside,
yeah. Yeah, he's just not very fast, and, you know, he's very raw out there. I mean, he's really only had 50 or 60 games out there. So, you know, it's going to take some time if they do want to go down that road rather than, you know, make him a, you know, a trading chip to try and, you know, bring in talent for, you know, maybe a stretch run or even in the offseason to fill a hole that they can't get in free agency.
Is now the time to trade him? What do you sense in terms of his – and this is really sort of a vague question intentionally, but where do you sense Alonso's value being on the trade market? You know, he's obviously number one pick, very highly regarded, but he's not really – killed the ball in the minor leagues, and is now a good time to trade him? Are we at his low point in terms of his trade value? Should they wait? What do you think?
I mean, it probably is his low point, but I think that he still has value out there. From talking to scouts, you know, he's still, you know, a pretty good commodity for the Reds to trade. It just seems that right now, all the teams that are trying to move guys off that are, you know, out there looking aren't looking for a first baseman. It seems everybody's got a guy that, you know, Alonso's not really a big upgrade from, you know, to make a trade for. So I think that, you know, unless something that we haven't really thought about comes up, that he's probably going to be a guy that's going to be talked about, you know, in the December winter meetings as a trade chip again.
Well, clearly he's blocked in Cincinnati unless the National League decides to start using a designated hitter, because he's not going to play ahead of Joey Votto. Joey Votto's turning into a folk hero in Cincinnati. So no matter how well Alonso hits, his spot's blocked. So you would hope that he'd have enough value where the Reds can really flip him for something good, because that's sort of what everybody said when he was drafted. The Reds thought he was the best available player, and that's fine. I don't mind, you know, not drafting for position in that situation, because you've always got a good, valuable trade commodity if they work out. And so I'm hopeful that he can pound the ball the rest of this year and really bring some value back to the Reds. A guy that, to shift gears here for just a second, a guy that sort of, there's lots of varying opinions on him, is Juan Francisco. Where do you stand? And we've talked about this every time you come on, we talk about Juan Francisco, because I'm not a Juan Francisco fan. Well, that's not really the best way to put it, but I'll give my opinion on him in a moment. But where do you stand on Juan Francisco?
Yeah, I think that we're probably on the same page. Yeah, I don't think that he's even close to ready to be a guy that you can play every day in the major leagues. His plate discipline is just terrible. It's weird saying that, because the first few, 10, 15 times I saw him play, there was not a pitch you could throw toward the plate that he would not swing at. And watching him the last year and a half in Louisville, you can see him making the adjustments and trying to wait for his pitch, but he just seems to, battle, and either, he's going to strike out, or he's going to, make contact when it gets to the point where, he's got 2-3 balls on him. He's just going to keep fighting, trying to get that hit. It seems like he's not okay with trying to take a walk, when he gets deep into the count. And I think that, that's something that major league pitchers are going to exploit a lot more than, the AAA guys that he's facing now. The power, though, I mean, I can see why the Reds, don't want to give up on the guy. He can hit the baseball further than anybody that's worn a Reds uniform outside of Adam Dunn in a long, long time. It's really tough to give up on a tool like that from somebody who's so young still.
I'll give you credit here. You made up for mentioning Orlando Cabrera earlier by bringing up Adam Dunn. That's always I always approve of any reference to Adam Dunn on the Red Leg Nation Radio podcast. So good work. My opinion on Francisco is, really, I've always felt like he's a guy that I hope some night there are, six scouts in the stands watching him, and he hits two balls about 500 feet each, and some organization becomes enamored of him and offers something. I don't see him ever really making much of an impact in Cincinnati. But, I mean, the guy, you're right, when he gets hold of the ball, I mean, he absolutely can hit it, and hit it harder than just about anybody you've seen. But I've always sort of compared him to a guy like Willie Mopeña, who had that great power and all these tools and just couldn't never really put it together. But, Willie Mopeña ended up being valuable to Cincinnati because he brought Bronson Arroyo. So,
yeah, I mean, there's always that hope. I think that the one thing, the difference with Peña and Francisco, is Willie Mopeña couldn't hit a breaking ball to save his life. Francisco can hit all the pitches. He's got a few holes under his hands, but, if there's a breaking ball in the outside corner, he can take it the other way. Willie Mo was never going to do that. He was dead red fastball or changeup. He wanted to hit something straight, and if it had any bend to it, he had no idea what to do with it. Francisco, he can hit those pitches.
Yeah, that's a good point. Francisco, he's not a bad hitter. If he had the plate discipline of a guy like Yonder Alonso.
Well, then we'd be talking about an MVP at
exactly.
23, 24 years old.
Exactly. There are very few people outside of Vladimir Guerrero that can swing at pitches all over the place and still be productive. The next guy I want to talk about, and I don't know if he's – I don't personally think that – I don't see the Reds wanting to trade him this year around the trade deadline or anytime, even postseason. But a guy that I think has been the biggest surprise for a lot of people in the Reds minor league system, Devin Mesoraco, catching now in Carolina in Double A. We talked to Mesoraco before the season, and we were really impressed by the guy, first of all. And everybody that we've talked to has really been complimentary of his work ethic, the way he's improved defensively, receiving the ball, throwing. But nobody could have predicted that he was going to bust out with a bat this year like he has. So what do you take out of that? What do you make of it?
Well, in the preseason, I did predict him as the breakout player of the year. Now, I didn't see him, doing what he's done because, it's just been flat out incredible. His OPS is, pushing 1,000 right now between two levels. I mean, nobody really ever predicts someone to do that. But, the signs were there last year that, his bat was ready to break out if he could stay healthy. He was in the Florida State League, but he still hit for above average power. And, he's coming off the thumb injuries. And, if he was going to be healthy, getting away from the Florida State League, all the peripherals just kind of lined up, and, you know, he took it to a different level this year. You know, he's 22 now, just turned 22. You know, that's kind of the age that you start to see guys really break out with the power, and, you know, he's really put together a great, great season.
Well, it's just been unbelievable. You know, you look at what he did. He started the year, obviously, in Lynchburg at High A, and in 43 games, he had 10 homers, 31 RBIs. He had 11 doubles, on-base percentage 414, batting average 335, OPS over 1,000. And you think, good grief, where did that come from, you know? But then you, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, well, you know, 43 games, and, you know, he's gotten hot. It's a bit of a fluke. They move him up to Double A, and initially he, you know, struggled just a little bit. But then you turn around and he's played 41 games there, 10 homers, 9 doubles, 301 average, 356 on base percentage, OPS almost up there, around 1,000. He's still hitting the ball very, very hard, and it's blown me away that he's continued to produce this long. How about his defense? What are we seeing with his defense?
You know, last year, until about mid-May, he was only throwing out like 5% of the guys that were tempted to run on him. It turns out, you know, he had an elbow injury, but they let him play through it. And from about the middle of May through the end of the season, he threw out 48% of the base runners against him. You know, but he started off so bad that at the end of the season, he only was at 30%. This year, between Double A and High A, he's thrown out, you know, 42%, which is right in line with what you'd expect. So, you know, it's really kind of just going along with where he was at last year while he was healthy. You know, he's still got a few too many pass balls. He's at 11 for the season. You know, you can't always take that number at face value in the minor leagues because, you know, sometimes pitchers just throw the wrong pitch. You know, you get your signs mixed up. I don't want to say that, you know, he needs to work on his receiving skills because I haven't seen him actually play this year outside of a few video clips. But, you know, I think that, you know, that might be a slight concern if you're looking just at the numbers solely on their own, that he does allow a few too many pass balls than you'd like to see. But, I mean, other than that, it seems like everything is right where you'd want to see it.
Well, that was the thing that he mentioned that he had been working on the hardest was his receiving skills. And he told a couple of good stories about walking into camp and being able to work out with Johnny Bench and being sort of awestruck about that. Seems like a really good kid. He's a guy that we're certainly rooting for. But because if he pans out, you know, a catcher with power, you don't see too many of those. He could really be of value for a number of years for the Reds in Cincinnati. Now, another guy I wanted to sort of mention, and I'm sort of shifting away from the question of trade chips and things like that, you know, some of the individual names that I think are interesting in the Reds minor league system. A guy named Bradley Boxberger is interesting to me, his performance. And I want to get your take on what he's done. He obviously was the supplemental pick after the first round in the draft last year, taken right after Mike Leake. Boxberger started out the season in High A at Lynchburg and, you know, pitched fairly well in 14 games. He started 13, 3.19 ERA, pitched fairly well, moved up to Double A, and has struggled in his short time in Double A. What are your thoughts on Brad Boxberger?
I love this kid. You know, he's got probably the highest ceiling of any pitcher that we've got in the system outside of Aroldis Chapman. You know, the other day, I got a report that he hit 98 miles an hour out of the bullpen in Carolina. You know, like you mentioned, he's really struggled. He's pitched, I think, 9 or 10 games for Carolina so far, and he's given up a run in every single game. I don't think that, you know, at least mentally or physically right now, he's ready to pitch out of the bullpen. You know, they made that move, and he's just absolutely struggled to throw strikes. You know, he's almost got as many walks as strikeouts out of the bullpen when, you know, he was well over 3-1 strikeouts to walks as a starter. But, you know, just his arm, it's probably the second best arm we've got in our system right now. You know, they need to move him to the bullpen to limit his innings because you don't really want to push him too hard. I don't think that, you know, people should be too concerned with the numbers he's putting up out of the bullpen because I think that the Reds are going to give him a shot to be a starter as long as they can. And what he showed as a starter this year means he's going to get a shot again next year when, you know, he can start starting again.
I hope to get down to see Boxberger play at some point, and now seems like as good a time as any to mention. I think you're going to be going on a trip to watch some of these guys. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, next month I'm going to be going on a week-long trip to Lynchburg in Carolina to scout all of these guys. They're the two teams that I haven't really seen yet this year. Well, and the Arizona League Reds, because they're way out in Arizona and there's no video online of them at all. So I'm pretty excited about that. I'm kind of in the planning stages right now, trying to get everything together. And I'm waiting on one other person. I might be getting a photographer to go with me to help shoot video and pictures. And I need to figure out if they can go or not before I can, you know, figure out the exact dates of when I can go.
Well, depending on my schedule, I'm hoping to be able to meet you in Lynchburg at some point on your trip, but that's going to depend on my schedule. But I've not been down to see Lynchburg play yet. I'm looking forward to doing that. I've been to that stadium before. I've seen Lynchburg play, but not since they've been a Reds affiliate. It's a nice little stadium. They do a good job down there. You kind of mentioned, sort of touched on something I was going to ask you. Who are, at this point in the season, halfway through, a little past halfway, who's the pitcher of the year and the hitter of the year? I know you're going to say for the hitter of the year, but who are the top two or three on both of those in the Reds minor leagues?
Well, I mean, the hitter of the year has to be Devin Mesoraco. I mean, nobody else is even close to, you know, putting up a season like he's done. I think, Dave Sappelt has got to be up there. He's leading the Southern League in batting average right now. He's over 350. Good glove center fielder. So, I mean, it's even, better than, if he was a corner infielder, it wouldn't be as impressive. But, he's hitting 350 and slugging over 500 as a really good glove center fielder. Those two guys are pretty much, they've separated themselves from everybody else as far as the hitters go.
Before you move over to the pitchers, I do want to mention Sappelt briefly, because he's one of my favorite guys in the Reds organization. 5'9" out of Coastal Carolina. He turned 23 before the season, and he has just pounded the ball since moving up to Carolina in Double A. 351 average, OPS at 930. Gets on base. This is a guy that you could see, sooner rather than later, being in center field in Cincinnati or somewhere. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I think that the one thing that's working against him is, I'm not sure that the Reds are going to, give him a shot to start in center field unless, Drew Stubbs just kind of falls off, just because it seems that, they really seem committed to Drew Stubbs. They've stuck with him through his struggles, and they've kind of reaped a reward, since he moved out of the leadoff spot. I'm not sure that, Sappelt's got that high ceiling that, they're going to be willing to push somebody like Stubbs out of the way for unless he really struggles. Which is kind of a shame because, his bat's probably not going to play at a corner position. And defensively, he's right there, at the top of the organization as far as, defense goes in center field.
Yeah, that's an abundance of riches is always a good problem to have. I interrupted you. Now I'll let you go ahead and talk about the pitchers.
The one thing with the pitchers, it's kind of been tough because, it seems that the guys that would be in the running have kind of been called up and taken out of the spotlight. Travis Woods has been putting together a really good season, and he was on a really good roll before he got called up. His ERA is over 3 right now, but over his last 10 starts in Louisville, it was under 2. I think that, he could have been in the conversation. I think that at the end of the day, though, I might give it to a relief pitcher in Donnie Joseph. He has been just absolutely lights out. He's got 80 strikeouts in 48 and two-thirds innings. He's got just 20 walks. His ERA is 1.48. He just flat-out dominated between Dayton and Lynchburg, and I'm just not sure that anybody else has an argument that, can stack up with his.
Yeah, he's had a fantastic season, and no question about it, from beginning to end. He actually won our Player of the Month, Pitcher of the Month, in the minor leagues last month. It's a great, great month. Let's go ahead and talk about the guy that everybody's been talking about, although lately things have quieted down a bit, about young Aroldis Chapman. He's actually, lately for the most part, he's been pitching out of the bullpen, but his last several outings have been pretty good.
Yeah, this guy's just got an electric arm, and it's really, really easy to fall in love with, you know, a guy that can throw 102 miles an hour, a legit 102 miles an hour. But, you know, he really struggles to throw the ball to the catcher's target at times. I've seen him multiple games throw less than half of his pitches within a 6-inch range of the catcher's target. And I'm just not sure that at this point he's ready. You know, he's had some games in the bullpen where, you know, for two or three batters, you know, every pitch he's throwing is absolute money right where the catcher wanted it, and the hitter has no chance. But then he'll throw 7 or 8 straight balls and walk the next two guys. I mean, I think that, you know, there's a chance that we could see him, you know, in September, but I'm not really sure that we're going to see him anytime before that.
I'm going to actually disagree with you there. I think the Reds are going to bring him up sometime before the end of August. That's my prediction. I think that,
you know, you might be right just because if they get to the playoffs, he has to be on the roster by August 31st.
Exactly. And, I just, you know, they're going to be in a pennant race, hopefully. You know, this guy is going to create some electricity when he gets called up. That's just my prediction. I don't have anything. I'm not basing that on anything other than just a sort of my sense that the Reds are going to want to bring him up sooner rather than later if he continues to show that he's, you know, somewhat ready. Clearly, the light hasn't clicked for him just yet with respect to control. Who knows if it will? We hope so. But he's put up several fairly good outings in a row in AAA. If he does, puts up another, you know, few outings like that, I really feel like they're going to start thinking, hey, let's get this guy up here. Let's toss him in the bullpen in Cincinnati, see what he's got. If nothing else, we'll sell some tickets.
Well, that's true. But let me toss you this one. Who are they going to send down if they call up Chapman?
I don't know. Bill Bray.
Well, yeah, he would be one of the options. It's nice to actually talk about this. I mean, the Reds have a lot of different little interesting bullpen options they've got coming up they might need to be making. You know, they got Chapman. You know, Russ Springer's pitching well. Jason Isringhausen. Could be interesting to see what goes on in the bullpen over the next few weeks.
I think it's going to be fascinating, both the bullpen and the starting rotation on the major league level, because you've got so many guys. You know, Travis Wood is just basically saying, you can't remove me from the rotation because he continues to produce in Cincinnati. My opinion, and I'm a huge Homer Bailey fan, still am, but my opinion is they would have moved Bailey to the bullpen. But again, you got a numbers game and I don't know what they're going to do. And I don't envy the decision makers in Cincinnati having to make that decision because there's a lot of options and not very many spots.
Yeah, you know, somebody's going to get sent down that does not deserve to be sent down. Somebody that, you know, they're doing their job and they're doing it well. It's just going to come down to, you know, a numbers game, like you said.
Yeah. And, you know, it's been so long since we've had to worry about anything like that. It's fun to talk about. What about Homer Bailey? He made his first, made a rehab start for Dayton yesterday. What are the reports on him after that first outing?
You know, the stuff was good from everything that I heard. You know, he had 5 strikeouts and 1 walk. You know, so the control was pretty good. You know, he only went, you know, 4 innings, so he's probably going to need to make another rehab start or maybe even 3 if they want to prolong the decision, you know, to, you know, kind of give other guys chances, maybe shine somebody up. Is a trade, you know, before, well, I guess we've only got 3 or 4 more days left until the trade deadline, but, you know, they can prolong that decision by giving him a few more rehab starts and building up his stamina coming off of the injury. I think he's going to be all right.
I'm going to put you on the spot here, and you may not have an answer for this, and I'm going to apologize ahead of time, but is there one guy in the Reds minor league system that a lot of your maybe not even casual fans, maybe even some hardcore fans of the Cincinnati Reds hasn't really heard much about that you think people ought to be, I don't know, paying more attention to or deserves a little bit more to be in the discussion a little bit more than what he has been? Anybody flying under the radar that you think needs to be highlighted?
Oh, man, that's such a tough question because I don't really know who fits into that under the radar because, you know, I follow them hardcore every day. I guess the guy that really has stepped up a lot this year that, you know, I guess your everyday fan hasn't heard of would probably be Billy Hamilton. You know, he's playing down in Billings right now. He started switch hitting last year. He's arguably the best athlete we've got in our system. You know, I think that defensively, he might be the best defensive player we've got in the entire system. You know, he's made some absolutely incredible highlight reel plays this season, you know, between shortstop and second base for Billings. I mean, he's just 19 years old. You know, last year he really struggled, and the progress that he's made this year has been just absolutely incredible. His upside is probably only matched from an offensive a position player standpoint by, you know, Devin Mesoraco and Yorman Rodriguez. I really think that, you know, his offensive potential could be in the same level as those guys one day.
I'm really glad to hear that. He's one of the guys that's really intrigued me. A lot of Reds fans may remember, obviously he was drafted last year, I guess in the second round, and he had a football scholarship offer to Mississippi State, I believe, and just reputed, as you say, to be just an unbelievable athlete. And I've seen some of those clips that you've linked of his defensive wizardry. And at his age, being in Billing, and his OPS is around 800, you know, if that guy pans out and can play shortstop, as good a athlete as he is, that could be a real steal for the Reds, picking a guy out of high school. What about this guy? And I don't know much about him. I'm just going to tell you right off, but I keep seeing his name in the reports every day, the Down on the Farm reports we do at RedLegNation.com. Junior Arias down there with the Rookie League, Arizona League Reds. Do you know anything about him? Anything you can pass along to us?
Yeah, he's a really good athlete. You know, their concern is that he's not going to stick at shortstop in the long run, which is fine. You know, he can hit for power, so he'd be able to play. You know, his bat would play plenty at, you know, a corner position if he needed to move there. Maybe even there's been talk that maybe he could move into center field one day, you know, once he plays his way off of shortstop. You know, he got signed, I think, in 2007, got like $300,000, which it's not a giant, you know, bonus baby kind of deal, but that's a significant, you know, chunk of change. You know, he was one of the top 15 guys out of Venezuela when he got signed. So, you know, he's been around for 2 years in the system. You know, right now he's absolutely killing the ball. You know, he needs to work on his plate discipline a lot. He's got seven times more strikeouts than he does walks. But, you know, when he puts the bat on the ball, you know, he's doing a lot of damage. So, you know, at 18 years old, you know, he's got plenty of time to work on the plate discipline. But it is the one thing that I'd watch with him as he moves up.
It seems like I see his name in the box score every day with three hits. It's crazy. I'm going to throw out a few names here and just get a brief one or two sentence reaction or more if you want to expound on it. But just what you think about these guys in terms of are they going to help the Reds if and, you know, when, and when's that going to happen, I guess, is the question. Let's start with Louisville. Clearly the best player in the history of the Louisville Bats, Corky Miller. No, I don't really want to talk about Corky. I just I love his mustache, and so I wanted to bring him up.
It's an awesome mustache.
I really hated when he was sent down. You know, obviously he's not going to make the team with Hannigan and Hernandez up there in Cincinnati. But golly, there's something about that Corky builder that that I love. Zach Cozart, shortstop, Louisville.
I really like this kid. I think that he might be one of the more underrated players in our system. You know, he does everything well. You know, he steals bases well. He's 23 for 26 this year. He's got slightly above average speed, you know, above average defense. You know, he's not going to hit for a high average, but, you know, he's going to draw his walks. He's probably going to hit you 15 to 20 home runs every year. You know, I really think that, you know, the Reds should give him a legitimate, like, shot next year in spring training to win the shortstop position.
Saw Cozart play some last year, a good bit in Double A, and was really impressed with his glove in, you know, the 6-7 games that I saw him play. But the pop in his bat, you know, he's got 15 homers this year in 100 games. That's sort of taken me a little by surprise. Do you see the Reds giving him a shot next year?
Oh, that's such a tough question because I know how much they love their veteran guys. And I know that some people want to try and play that off, but I really think that, you know, it's going to be tough for them to go into, you know, spring training next year and say, oh, well, you know, we're going to give our shortstop position to whoever plays better between Paul Janish and some guy that 95% of the fans out there have never heard of in Zach Cozart. So I'd be really surprised if that's the route that they went, but I'd be really happy if it is the route that they went.
Yeah, that's sort of the way I feel about it. It pretty much sums up my thoughts. perfectly. I don't necessarily see it happening, but it really wouldn't be a bad thing for the Reds to do that. Of course, they had Cozart at Reds Fest, I think, this year, so he's maybe in their plans. They like him. Vladimir Ballantyne, we ever going to see anything out of this guy?
I hope so. You know, he's been hitting into some really bad luck this year down in Louisville. You know, his batting average on balls in play is about 80 points lower than you would think it would be, you know, given his line drive rate. And, you know, his power is absolutely legit. He has been killing the ball lately. I think he's got 9 home runs in his last 15 games. He's just been on an absolute tear. I think that, you know, he's a really good fit, you know, for a lot of teams as a fourth or fifth outfielder. Now, whether that team is the Reds, I'm not sure, just given the other options that they have.
Drew Sutton, he could be on a major league bench for somebody right now, couldn't he?
Yeah, he could. I'm not sure that the Reds are that team, just given who else that they have. You know, I think that, you know, the Reds really enjoy having, you know, a veteran guy like Miguel Cairo coming off of their bench. And then, you know, Paul Yandish kind of fits the same role that you would see a Drew Sutton in, who can kind of play anywhere on the infield.
Let's see, who else at Triple A? Chris Valleca.
You know, I really like Chris Valleca as far as, you know, a utility guy goes. I'm not too sure anymore if I think that he could be a starting second baseman. You know, his power really dropped off this year. I know he had a hand injury last year, but before, you know, I give him a shot at starting it, I want to see more power out of him.
All right. Jared Burton, he's still stuck down there in AAA, but pitching awfully well. When are they going to get this guy back up in the majors? Maybe that comes down to the numbers game we were just talking about.
Yeah, you know, he's putting up really good numbers. I think his ERA is under 2.5 right now. You know, he's still battling with his control a little bit. You know, not quite 2-1 strikeout to walk ratio. You know, like you said, it's the numbers game. The Reds have a lot of really, really good bullpen options right now. You know, he might get a chance again next year. I'm not sure that he's going to be given an opportunity to, you know, play before, you know, the start of next year for the Reds. There are just too many other options that, you know, the Reds have and that they've kind of committed themselves to.
Dropping down to AA Carolina, is there anyone on that pitching staff down there? Maybe Scott Carroll?
Scott Carroll is probably the guy that I'd watch the most. I'm not sure that he's going to be a starter in the majors. You know, coupled with, you know, first off, what the Reds have ahead of him on their depth chart, even if, you know, by some off chance that the Reds let both Arroyo and Harang walk, he's just so far down the depth chart that I'm not sure he's going to get a chance. But I'd really like to see him out of the bullpen, because he can hit 95, you know, with his sinker, you know, as a starter every now and again. You know, if he can get up to, you know, sitting at 95 with a sinking fastball out of the bullpen, I really think that, you know, he'd have a good career like that. You know, the other guy you mentioned, Matt Farrell, he kind of reminds me of a Matt Maloney, a little less polished than Matt Maloney has right now, but Matt Maloney's also a few years older than he is. But I think that, you know, he's another guy that, you know, we could see in the major leagues one day that's off of that pitching staff. You know, and then, you know, you mentioned Boxberger earlier. I think that, you know, he's going to be in the major leagues one day. Just, you know, what role is yet to be determined with him.
Sticking with that Carolina team, what's the word? I've seen him play a couple times. I don't have any real sense just from my own eyes. Defensively, Chris Negron?
Yeah, you know, he's a pretty good defensive shortstop. At the very least, he's average. You know, he might even be above average. You know, he's got good speed and he uses it well over there. You know, I think that, you know, he's a guy that kind of gets overlooked because of all the depth that the Reds actually do have at the shortstop position, you know, in their farm system. You know, he's not a great prospect, but he's certainly more than like an organizational guy.
Okay, let's drop down to single A just quickly. Let's run through these. Anybody at Lynchburg that we need to keep an eye on?
That team it's been stripped of some of its better prospects.
It has been, hasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Donnie Joseph is still down there. You know, I think that we touched on him earlier. You know, he's going to be pretty good. You know, Neftali Soto's still got a chance. You know, he's showing really good power, especially considering he's coming off a hamate injury, which usually saps guys' power for over a year. I like Cody Puckett. His bat's pretty good. He's made some decent strides in his plate discipline, which was a concern coming into this season. You know, there's questions as to where he's going to play. Not many people think he can play second base. He's gotten a few starts out in the outfield, but I think that his bat could play one day if he keeps progressing. That's probably about it on the hitting side. I mean, the pitching, not too many good arms down there right now. It seems that they kind of had their arms purged from them as well. They don't have a single guy left from their starting rotation at the beginning of the season. Every single one of those guys has been pushed up a level.
What do you think? I'm not even sure how to pronounce his name as we move on to Dayton. What do you think about Ryan Lamar? He was picked, I guess, in the second round of the draft this year out of the University of Michigan. What's the word on him?
You know, great athlete. His scouts seem to like his power a little bit more than I do. So I think that that's really the main sticking point with me as far as Lamar goes. Now, I kind of want to see how much power he's going to hit for, because right now I'm not sure that, you know, he's going to be able to hit, you know, 10 home runs in the major leagues. Some scouts have told me I'm wrong on that. That's okay. We can have different opinions for now. But, you know, he's a really, really good athlete, tons of speed, you know, really good defense. You know, Dayton's got Andrew Means out there, too. You know, those two guys are great defensive center fielders. I like him a lot. I kind of question the power, though. That's really the only thing I'm concerned with right now with him.
Mark Fleury, the catcher who was drafted in the fourth round last year out of University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Oh, I'd rather talk about Orlando Cabrera. But he's had a decent season down there, hasn't he?
Yeah, you know, he's only hitting .249, but, you know, he draws a lot of walks, and the power's really come around lately. You know, he's a guy that, you know, I had a few arguments with some people in the organization about him last year. But I think that, you know, as long as he just keeps progressing, you know, he's got a shot to be a major leaguer. You know, he's got power, he's got patience. He just kind of needs to round out the rest of his game a little bit more.
I look at his numbers and I see an on-base percentage that's about 100 points higher than his batting average, and it makes me think it's a guy that's got a clue at the plate at least. 22 years old, I think, something like that. So, yeah, I'm interested to watch him. Oh, anyone else at Dayton that I'm looking down the list here?
The best prospect on their team, in my opinion, has got to be D.D. Gregorius. You know, he's only got a .688 OPS right now. You know, 20 years old, shortstop, but you know, he's got all the tools that you want to see. You know, he's really good defensively. He, you know, arguably, you know, maybe a plus defender at shortstop. I mean, at the very least, he's an above-average defensive shortstop right now, range-wise. He's got to, you know, work a little bit on, you know, rounding out his defense. But, you know, he's a guy that I think could be a legitimate major league starting shortstop in a few years. You know, he's still a little raw and needs to work on a few things, but, you know, his plate discipline's good. He's got, you know, 47 strikeouts and 26 walks and 410 plate appearances. You know, he's got some power potential. The defense is there. You know, he's just young and raw. I think that, you know, he probably is the best prospect on that team right now.
Definitely has a major league name, D.D. Gregorius. Absolutely.
Oh, it gets better. His full name is actually Marikson Julius Gregorius.
Oh, man.
It's fantastic.
That is great. He's now my favorite player. Last guy I want to talk about, you mentioned him earlier very briefly, but a guy that we've kind of been watching because he was signed so young and is beginning to progress a little bit and impress a little bit, Yorman Rodriguez, who's with Billings now.
That guy is just absolute human tool shed. You know, he's drawn comparisons with, you know, guys like Eric Davis. And, I mean, if that doesn't tell you how, you know, high of a ceiling this guy has, I'm not sure what else will, you know. He got to play in Billings last year, and he struggled. You know, this year, the numbers look a lot better, but I think at the same time, you know, he's kind of having the same struggles. He's got some serious plate discipline problems right now, and it's not so much that he strikes out a lot, it's that he's not walking hardly at all. You know, he's got one walk and 16 strikeouts this year, and, you know, he's going to have to improve that. You know, he's just 17. He's the second youngest player in the league, so it's nothing to be overly concerned about right now. But that really seems to be the only wart on his game. You know, Delino DeShields has been quoted saying, you know, that he loves his work ethic and how he plays the game. You know, he's a guy that goes out and gives it his all every time he's out on the field, which, you know, for a guy that's 17 and signed, you know, a $2.7 million contract, that's something you really don't see that often. You know, I think that he's a guy that could, you know, absolutely explode through the system in the next 2 years.
Yeah, 17 years old, if with all the tools he has, if the light goes on for him, the way you described it, he could shoot straight up through the system quickly. It's an interesting name to watch. All right. Doug, anything else about the Reds minor leagues we need to know?
I could probably go on for 4 or 5 hours if you wanted me to, but, you know, nothing really that jumps out right away is something that you'd be missing out on if I didn't tell you about it.
What do you think about the Cincinnati Reds? They're going to stick in this race for the rest of the season?
I don't see a reason why they wouldn't. They're a pretty well-rounded team. They've got a few holes here and there, but, you know, the Cardinals, they also have a few holes here and there. I don't see anybody else coming up through the division to, you know, push either one of those teams. So I there's no reason to believe that they won't be there at the end of the year.
I agree. I think the next 2 months are going to be a lot of fun in Cincinnati. I just don't see, especially the number of games that we play in the division with such a terrible division this is, the Reds are in, I don't see any way they fade too far. I think they're going to be right in out there to the very end, and that's going to be a lot of fun for those of us who have not experienced a whole lot of winning baseball in a while. Doug, I really appreciate you joining us. We're going to have you on again, hopefully, sooner rather than later. It took us a little longer this time than I wanted to. Always enjoy talking to you. Good luck at RedsMinorLeagues.com.
Thanks a lot.
All right, and thanks to each of you for listening to the Red Leg Nation Radio podcast. As we say every week, I know you got a lot of things you could be doing other than listening to this ridiculous Southern accent. Listen to me ramble at you for a little while. We appreciate the fact that you download this podcast and listen to it every time we put one out. Got any questions, send those to us at radio@redlegnation.com. Always come check out what we're doing at Red Leg Nation. We're having a lot of fun every day there. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook and all that jazz. That's all for this week. For Doug Gray of RedsMinorLeagues.com, this is Chad Dotson saying so long.